They're not supposed to sleep on soft beds, and they can't handle gold or silver. So in a monastery, if the monastery has financial dealings that need to be taken care of, they have to have a layperson who will take care of their accounts and engage in the purchases that keep the monastic life in motion. The prohibition against sleeping on soft beds is an amusing one. It reminds me of an experience I once had when I was in the Center for World Religions at Harvard, which also was what we sometimes call a laboratory of interreligious dialogue, as well as a place for scholars to come and study other religious traditions. There was quite a noted monk from Thailand who came to visit us one time, and in this rather austere place, we thought we had what I considered, at least at the time, to be not very soft beds. In truth, they were pieces of foam rubber over what seemed like a chain link bed frame. This monk came in, looked at that foam rubber, and thought, phew, no way can I sleep on such a padded mattress. And he took the foam rubber off and leaned it up against the wall and slept right on the chain link bed frame. I was a little surprised, but I suppose I shouldn't have been if I had been reading the stipulations of the monastic code. In any case, the monks observe these five additional precepts in addition to the five precepts of an ordinary layperson. And in the process, of course, set the stage through a certain kind of karmic preparation for the process that will lead eventually to nirvana. Another thing that Buddhist practitioners do, of course, is to engage in mental concentration. The term here is samadhi, to concentrate the mind. Most of you think, I suspect, if you think about Buddhist practice, that meditation is really the most fundamental thing that Buddhists do, and that's certainly true in many parts of the Buddhist tradition. You might even begin yourselves to imagine what meditation might be like. It's not impossible to do it even in very ordinary situations in life. What you try to do is to situate yourself very stably, sit in a chair. You could probably even do it standing if you could be stable. Keep your back straight. The Dalai Lama insists on this when he teaches meditation, and it's important to do it because it allows you to breathe freely. It allows your diaphragm to be free. And then you might want to fold your hands in front of you in this particular gesture. This is one of the simplest, with your one palm laying on another and your thumbs just touching. Lay your hands in your lap, and then just breathe. Concentrate your attention as much as you can on that place in the pit of your stomach where your breathing centers, and allow your body and your mind to become calm. One of my old yoga teachers in India once used to say that in an experience of samadhi like this, you allow the thoughts in your head to simply drain out of your mind as if they were dirty water out of a bathtub. And in a way, that's what it is. It's allowing the mind to become calm and allowing the thoughts to clarify themselves by allowing all of this buzzy activity of in the brain just simply to stop. You could imagine, I suppose, that this discipline of mental concentration is a way of doing for the mind what the discipline of moral conduct does for the body. It's a way to stop all of those distractions, all of those negative tendencies that tie you to the experience of death and rebirth. So this form of meditation, of mental concentration, of calming the mind by focusing on the breath, is one of the most basic forms of Buddhist discipline. It's found in the early scriptures, found in the early records of the Buddhist community, and then it, of course, continues on in practice among Buddhists today. Finally, the third thing that you want to do, and in a lot of ways this is the most important because it really is the foundation of all other Buddhist virtues, is to cultivate wisdom. Here the word is punya. It actually comes from the great Sanskrit root gna, J-N-A, which is cognate with our knowledge, with the kano of knowledge. So prajna, punya, is in a sense prognosis, to know the nature of the world and to know where it's going, so that you yourself can become detached from it and begin the process that leads to nirvana. What do you know? Of course, particularly the reality of no self. So it's these three things, sila, samadhi, and punya, that lead you eventually to the experience of nirvana.